Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the PGA of Canada Tee Talks podcast. My name is Mark Rowe, and today we have the women's head coach for Team Canada. Now, before she was crushing it as a coach, she was a two-time Ontario junior champion, as well as the two-time Canadian junior champion. She also received the golf scholarship at a school called Stanford University, which I've heard has produced some pretty good golfers over the years and some scholars as well, including today's guest who graduated with a BA psychology and economics. She competed in the 2003 U.S. Women's Open. She is the former assistant women's golf coach at the aforementioned Stanford University. She has seven professional victories to her name. Today's guest, the one and only Salima Moussani. Great to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Mark. It's my pleasure to be here.
First question. How do you make me a single handicap?
Just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
You might already be there, so I have to ask my due diligence first. So
no.
A trick question.
I'm going in the wrong direction. I just had two young kids in like a span of a year. So I'm hoping to reintroduce myself to the sport next summer. But no, we have far more important things to talk about than my golf game. I love the, you know, the athlete who is so accomplished, who becomes a coach, and, you know, the dichotomy of those two things. Let's start there. If you compared your time now as a coach versus when you were playing, what are some of the changes you see in coaching junior golfers at that high performance level?
Well, I don't want to date myself, so I won't say how many years ago I was a junior, but it has been a long time, a couple decades, maybe three. We'll just throw that out there. But I mean, if I were to just succinctly wrap it up, you know, there's definitely obviously more depth in coaching now. Everything's more competitive. I think the entire landscape of junior golf is just more well-rounded. Obviously the advances in technology, I mean, that would be the first thing I would say. Like from when I was a junior to now, we didn't have all the instruments and all the technology that they have access to now between TrackMans, quads. Even if we now shift to like training and the coaching, the biomechanics of the golf swing, the sports science, it's so much more of a specialized sport. And obviously starting earlier into the junior days, people are specializing and getting personalized programs from a very young age. Obviously there's focus on fitness and nutrition that probably wasn't there when I was there. I'm sure we were eating, you know, all the bad snacks back then. The opportunities, I mean, for tournaments, for scholarships, they were there then, but it's more so now. It's more of a goal. It's more of a purpose for juniors nowadays. Obviously it's a pathway to education for everyone. You know, mental training, never used to do that. Didn't have a mental performance coach when I was growing up. That's an integral part of what's happening now. Mindfulness, meditation. There's more and more kids getting into golf now too. Look at the first tee programs, the impact they're having around the country, around the world. You have so many more different people playing, which obviously ups the ante from a competitive standpoint and all that. And then, I mean, you have role models now, right? The Tiger Woods, the Rory McIlroys, Ricky Fowlers. On the women's side, you've got Michelle Wee, Lydia Ko, Rose Zhang now. You've got all these people that are now, you know, back then it was kind of a Tiger thing, maybe. I don't even remember as a junior. A little bit of the Tiger thing was just happening. But yeah, I think all those factors have kind of influenced junior golf. And obviously, I don't think I mentioned, but social media. I mean, I think it's kind of pervasive in everything we do these days.
Well, you know, and when you are, you know, any athlete that's competing probably isn't thinking about coaching, unless they're maybe in their final seasons and they know retirement's around the corner. Being a head coach of Team Canada is pretty cool. Like, that's a pretty nice title that you have right now. Was that always an aspiration for you? And you know, what would you say to someone listening right now that hopes to have a similar position that you have at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, when I got into golf, I was 13, so I was fairly old. And my number one goal was to be a player. And I had the opportunity to do that for, you know, 7 years, 7 to 8 years. And then I had some health challenges that kind of forced me out of the game. And pushed me towards coaching. I went back to Stanford and coached the team there for 3 years. And then after 3 years, I started feeling better. So I went and tried to play again, got sick again. And then obviously that job was gone pretty quickly at Stanford. So I made the move to Vancouver, not with the intention of becoming a coach. I was a financial advisor, kind of tested the waters in some different industries. And I think that, you know, the passion, the love, and everything kind of pulled me back. My coach that I had, he passed away in the middle of my playing career. And I think there was a little bit of like wanting to follow his legacy and give back to the game. Few people that knew me when I was in Vancouver, because I grew up in Ontario, they're like, oh, you're a golfer, we want lessons. So I started teaching in the evenings and doing the financial thing during the day. And then like the scales of balance quickly switched to where the golf was just super busy and I was loving it. I was enjoying it. I was giving back to the game, growing the game, and able to kind of feed that passion. And so, yeah, then, you know, 7 years, 8 years of coaching in Vancouver at three different golf courses, the opportunity came up to be an assistant. There was a position open and I applied and became the assistant of the national team. And then, you know, now I'm sitting in this position as the head coach and it's pretty special. Yeah, I don't know how to say that. It wasn't on my radar, but now I feel like I've been put in this position for a reason. I love it. I love giving back. I love helping these girls kind of transition through all these things that I've done and that I've worked my way through. And then again, applying the lens of, you know, the 21st century to tell these things that we're doing is really fun. So yeah, I didn't know I was going to be here, but I'm pretty excited and happy to be here.
Well, I can tell that you love it because throughout this, you know, the last answer you just gave me, you had a smile on your face pretty much the whole time, which obviously is great. And why would you get into this business if you didn't love it? You know, I think financial advisors probably has a little more job security, but not as much fun. You know, I have to think though that coaching a golfer has got to be one of the toughest sports to be a coach because you obviously have the physical element, but there's such a mental component to being a golfer. You know, can you share maybe a time where you really had a challenge just getting through to an athlete? Like, how did you manage that, and what was the outcome, whether it was positive or negative?
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens all the time. Working with high performance elite athletes, you know, they come with their own kind of set of things, right? They have their own expectations, which are very high. They have very limited time because they have engagements and practice and tournaments and schedules. So you have a very small window to engage with them. They're a little bit resistant to change because they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for a long time. And so because of that, they have their past experiences kind of shape, you know, they know what's worked for them in the past, I guess. And so they're a little bit resistant to that change. And they're independent humans. They have their own minds. They want to do all that. So the way to get through to them and the way I've had to, like, I've learned, and it takes time. It took time getting the job is you have to first build that trust with them, right? You got to create that rapport, get to know them. They get to know you. You maybe dabble here and there. You get the opportunity to give a piece of feedback here or there. And then it's kind of a growing trust that happens. You collaborate with them. You make them part of the process. You make them part of the solution. You get their feedback. You customize the way you talk to them. You might know they're like a visual learner or a technical learner or a feel, you know, you get kind of a sense of how they learn. And so you have to be able to adapt to that. But yeah, I mean, on my part, it's about being relevant, right? I have to keep up my education and where I am with things so that I can help them. But it's all predicated on trust and rapport. Usually the outcome is positive, but there are times where, you know, my value add might not be a technical thing or might not be something totally hands-on. But yeah, it's really fun to figure out, kind of navigate your way through all the different personalities and find a solution and help them, you know, in the areas where they have a gap and finding out and figuring out how I can help them and bring, whether it's somebody else or me or, you know, another angle to help them to make a change.
Well, because these are high performance athletes, the expectations that they put on themselves are so high. So, you know, it becomes a little more demanding. And, you know, on that subject, I was reading that Golf Canada is hoping, or they've, like I said, a goal to have 30 Canadians on the LPGA and PGA tours by 2032. So speaking of PGA professionals, how do they support that lofty goal that Golf Canada has implemented?
Yeah, so the PGA of Canada professionals, I mean, I was one of them. Our role is to kind of at that ground level, right? We're seeing the athletes, we're getting the first contact with those athletes. So the PGA professionals now that are teaching are getting that first contact. So the first part is alignment, right? Like having them understand what our goals are and where we're trying to go. And then, you know, also for us, we have a whole new talent ID layer at the bottom. Tristan Mullally, who was the former head coach of the women's program, is running that. And basically he's, you know, meeting with a lot of the provincial and local coaches that are hotbed coaches and up and coming coaches, and helping them to create somewhat of a framework or a kind of a baseline, you know, as kids are getting into the sport, like the fundamental things that, you know, we want them to know and to learn, so that when they are moving up through the ranks and competing, they have this really solid structure below them. And so I guess it's all about, you know, everybody educating everybody to know where we are, what we're trying to do, and having that alignment so that we're all supporting each other. You know, it's not a bottom-up thing. It's not a top-down thing. I think it's a collaboration of all the different layers, creating opportunity for these kids, introducing them to the game, and then introducing them to the game with good knowledge and good support and good structure, I think is what's really important.
So how important is your role at the moment with PGA professionals supporting those athletes at the club level who are aspiring, or maybe they're even on those provincial and national teams?
Yeah. So, I mean, my role then is to just obviously collaborate, a lot of collaboration. We're working into that system, like how we can help to kind of push the information down, like what's missing when they get to us, or how can they support us as the players are getting higher? Because then once they get to me, if they've come from a provincial program, I'm a big collaborator. So I'm talking to the private coaches, the personal coaches, the provincial coaches, if they're involved. There's a lot of cross communication. And so the direct role with me and a PGA professional at that low level is minimal. That's where Tristan kind of steps in with his layer. But, you know, if there was a wish list or something that we could kind of hope for, I think it would be really cool to have like coaches camps or some types of retreats where we're all kind of in the same space and sharing our ideas and learning together. I think that would be really cool to create that like in-person collaboration where we're learning our craft together, and doing those types of things together versus just talking about an athlete. I think it would be really cool to all be in the same space learning. So that's just kind of my idea of what the ideal would be.
Right. And as you know, they try to get to that next level, what is the biggest opportunity for growth, or maybe your one wish to narrow the gap?
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it, is just everybody being aligned. I think that's kind of my wish, is just alignment of, so everybody knows what we're doing. It's not a mystery what we're doing at the national program level. And then we also know what's happening on the ground, and everybody's giving feedback, as I mentioned, both ways. I think it's really important that there's like two-way communication, and that's how most growth will happen.
You know, I've covered a lot of tennis at TSN, and I've been lucky to meet a lot of players, especially the Canadians, and also talk to the coaches. And it is grueling, their schedule. And it's the same with golfers, because there is so much travel. And that's often when, you know, players have their coaches and they might break up, and it has nothing to do with the actual success that they have on the court, or in your case on the course. It's just, you know, there's a mental and physical, you know, toll that you, that it takes on you, you know, with your life on the road, which I got to imagine is difficult. How do you manage your time? And as I point out, the physical and mental health component of it.
Yeah. I mean, with this job, last year I was on the road almost half the year, let's call it around 180 days on the road. And, that's, you know, 60 to 70 flights. That's a lot
of hotel
a
rooms.
Lot of travel. So, it's lonely. I mean, we're not going to share, right? It's a lonely existence when you're on the road. You're very isolated. I personally become very disconnected from my friends and the community here in Vancouver. You know, when you're not face to face with people, that connection disappears pretty quickly. You know, yeah, you get to know yourself a lot more. You learn to enjoy your own company. Some of the things that I've done more of are like listening to podcasts, reading a lot of books. Netflix is, you know, the invention of the inventions.
Right.
Trying to get to the gym, but even then it's hard. The days are long. You know, I have my own health issues, so I have to be careful not to overdo it. But thankfully, like, I'm in nature. My job's in nature. I get to walk a lot. I get to be outside. There are those days that are challenging with weather, cold, rain, etc. But for the most part, pretty blessed to be outdoors. So I think that's definitely a piece that has helped the mental health side. You know, if you're inside, moving, traveling a ton, and then sitting in boardrooms and offices and presenting in front of computers, I think that would be a lot more challenging. I think I have that outlet of being in nature, which is really, really positive. You know, I have somebody that I check in with regularly to hold me accountable to certain things as far as my self-care and what am I doing for myself. So that's really good, because it's very easy to kind of get deeper and deeper into a whole lot of nothing. So yeah, and I think for me, like, I do a lot of volunteer work with my community. I, for the province of BC, I run all the youth and sports events. And it's a very, very heavy volunteer job. I have meetings 3 to 4 times a week in the evening. So those go late into the night, especially when I'm on the East Coast, because it's a BC position. But that also helps me with my engagement. It helps me be part of something bigger. I don't have a family. I'm, you know, on my own. And so you got to have, like I said at the beginning, like, the connection is kind of gets severed when you're, even when I come home, right? It's hard to connect with your friends because they all have busy lives. They have kids, they're running around. And so this, for me, this volunteer work, has really helped to keep me with a really good solid baseline of engagement and working towards something that's bigger than me, and giving my time and energy. So I don't know, that's a kind of a long-winded answer to kind of, yeah, the truths of it, the hard parts, and then, yeah, the parts that help me stay sane, I guess.
Yeah, because all of us see, like, the beautiful golf courses you're going to and maybe the beautiful places in the world, and they don't see the hours, they don't see the, you know, like, checking in, checking out hotels, living out of a suitcase. Like, it wears on you. And let's add on to the fact that you are in the most result driven business that there is as a coach, right?
Absolutely.
So how do you separate, let's call it, your self-worth as a coach from your athlete's performance?
You know, it's similar to what we teach them, you know, in a result, it's similar in different ways. You know, I'm being judged on the performance of them. They're being judged on the performance of them. But we're all humans at the end of the day. And so that's partially the skill, is separating, for me, the outcome of the athletes from who I am, and for them, separating their own results from who they are when they leave the golf course. And so, I mean, the things that are important are, that I do, are just focusing on my process. So what we're doing on a regular basis, how I'm helping them. You got to be, like, super deep into those moments of, like, what are they actually doing on a regular basis, and how am I able to help them? You know, being able to define the success by very objective measures, like are we reaching certain targets? If we're not, how can we change what we're doing to reach those targets? And then, yeah, it's like you have to be able to understand everybody has an individual path and separating, you know, what my value is, it goes beyond what they achieve. So even if I'm having a positive influence on an athlete and they're struggling, but we're moving from like where they're struggling and they're just growing a little bit, maybe they're not having the success that they anticipate, they expect, they want right away. But those small kind of wins along the way, you got to value those. It's really important. I think having empathy to help nurture them in their growth and development, those are also my value adds. So regardless of the immediate outcome, again, how am I helping them to grow and develop? There's a lot of things, you know, outside of my control, obviously. Once they step on the first tee, it doesn't really matter what I've done with them. It's on them now, right? So I have to really, yeah, I have to remind myself I'm not the sole determinant of their success. Like they get to own that. And we all bring different things to that equation, right? Like my upbringing, their upbringing, our personalities, all of that kind of pastes into the final outcome at the end of the day, how they carry themselves on the golf course. So, and then, yeah, the final piece is just being able to separate and create that boundary between the personal life and the professional life, right? We all, no matter what we do, and I think for me, like the being able to be like in it when I'm there, and then having, you know, my volunteer work helps me kind of flip in and out instead of like, you know, mindlessly going through the day. So having that separation, having all those things, being able to understand my value add in their growth and their development, separating all that from their outcomes is, it's all critical, right? It's critical in anything anybody does. So yeah, those are the things I have to keep reminding myself on a regular basis.
It's a bit of a balance, and I'm sure a little bit of a juggling act as well. And, you know, earlier you talked about how important it is for you to kind of stay ahead of the curve or evolve in the sport. Where do you go to develop your skills as a coach?
Yeah, there's lots of different places and ways, obviously, like colleagues, the other national coaches, there's education, you know, PGA of Canada has lots of education, webinars, the tea talks, are all places where so much information is being shared. I read a lot of books, in this position. I read a lot of books on leadership. I read a lot of books on team culture, even though golf, we all know, is not a team sport. I think there's a lot of things that are really important and really valuable that you can learn. I have like a leadership counselor consultant that through Golf Canada, I've had the opportunity to be part of a leadership cohort with a bunch of other Olympic coaches with the Olympic year coming up next year. So having that ability to join in on those, you know, weekly sessions, and then the seminars that are available, just constantly learning. I mean, continuous education is the key, especially in this sport. It's changing all the time. You have to stay up on what's new, what's the latest, what are people talking about, what are the trends. So, you know, now, you know, I'm traveling so much, so I have the time to listen to the podcast, download a few on the plane, reading the books. So those are my opportunities that I have the time to do it. And so that's what I have to do to stay challenged, to stay engaged, to stay up on it. So those are my key, I would say my top three things to do.
So you learn a lot outside of golf then. Like you're talking about leadership. And
yeah,
sure
the leadership stuff is really valuable. Yep. Even through my volunteer work. I mean, we get exposed to so many things like presenting in front of large people and, you know, big people, and like just learning how to express and communicate and convey ideas is a really important skill as the head coach of the national team.
Right. I guess it's all part of being well-rounded, right? That you're kind of like breaking your intellectual mold in a way to kind of see things from another side that maybe it applies to a certain athlete that you have, or maybe it does like years later that you don't even realize like the two connect. And you talked about obviously you like to read a lot. What are your strategies from transferring that knowledge that you're getting if you're say are reading a book into new coaching behaviors?
Yeah, I think the first piece is like applying it practically, right? So I can read, you can read about it, but then until you actually do it and practically apply it, whether it's in a situation with an athlete or in an opportunity to speak and share ideas, that's for me where I learned it. Once you do it, for me, like even writing things down, I remember it more than just reading it. So for me, that's kind of the application part really helps. And then understanding the uniqueness of each individual. So if I understand how the individual is, I can adapt what I'm trying to teach to them, right? So I might learn something, it's really cool, but now my student might be a visual learner. So learning how to adapt that learning now into a visual cue for the athlete is really important. I think reading case studies is really helpful. So you have like the theory and then you have the real life, like how did it apply and how people strategized around that, I think is a really cool way to learn. In some of these leadership conferences I've done, we do a lot of role playing. So creating a case study, fake scenario, and then acting our way through it and with actors and getting the pushback and, learning how to handle certain situations is really, really good. Reflection. Having open communication with the athletes and then reflecting and being able to understand how that all works. I think having collaboration and mentors is really important for learning. Again, this brings the theory into real, how people apply things. And then yeah, just being open to changing my style. So I may have done things one way too, teaching and coaching in one way. And if it's not effective, I have to also be adaptable and change my style. And so, yeah, it's all just a process, right? Like you learn things, you have information, and then it's how do you apply it? How do you learn to apply it? How do you change it? How do you make it your own? Is kind of the beauty of the art and the art of it.
It's interesting because I'm picturing you with one of your golfers, and you're taking that knowledge and you're trying to apply it to them and trying to help them out. And you'd like to think that every player is going to be like, okay, yep, that sounds great. And they just apply it right away, or at least they work on it and eventually, success. They fix their drive, or they fix their iron play, or their better short game, or they're mentally stronger. I'm going to guess that's not always the case. I'm wondering, especially because you're dealing with younger athletes, what is there a common sort of reaction that you get from them when you're trying to break through, whether it's something that you read about, whether it's just something that you're seeing, where you're almost learning from them because it's clearly a trend that they're all kind of saying it this way. And okay, I'm now looking inwards. This is the way that I need to kind of, I need to come maybe go down a different avenue to get this message across.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it happens, like I mentioned, it happens all the time, right? That's really the challenge of this job is they've come from somewhere, right? I'm not their only coach. So I'm learning from their coaches what they're doing, how they're communicating. And when I see something, they come to a national team camp or I'm at a tournament where they're competing. I'm watching what they're doing. I'm creating my own set of feedback and then sharing that, with the coach that's worked with them for years. Because a lot of those, I was one of those coaches, right? I was sitting on the lesson tee teaching a bunch of students, didn't have all the time to go out and watch them actually compete, which is where it all happens, right? That's where the magic happens. And so being able to share that feedback then with the personal coach and work with them. And then they might say, oh, this is what we do, this is what we do. And there are some cases where, they're open enough to where we can collaborate. And I'll be like, look, why don't we try XYZ? Or, you know, I know that this athlete likes this. So maybe there's an angle where we can approach it from this way. So it's just a lot of collaboration and understanding the athlete. I think that's really important. And we have that benefit as being national team coaches, where a lot of these athletes come through our program for years. So it's similar to being a college coach, where you get to work with them for a long period of time, an extended period of time, to have an effect, versus kind of that transactional lesson tee, one buying packages of 1, 3, 5, and then you never see them again. So it just takes time. It's a slow process to make change at this high level. And like I mentioned earlier, they come with their own set of expectations. They have their, I don't like the word ego, but they already have like who they are and what they are,
their own personality.
Yeah. Their own personalities. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to change that. Right. What they come with and who they are is really unique to them. But finding the angles to just make those little changes, and sometimes it's really big things that need to be changed, and it's not golf related, but it's, you know, maybe how they react to a golf shot, or, you know, how they're analyzing their performances. Like, those things take time to shift habits, right? Because we all have our own way of doing things. We all have our own way of everything. And so when somebody comes in and tries to change that, you're going to get met with resistance, especially from a high performance athlete.
Well, I bet you, like, or at least I assume, how to deal with adversity on the course has got to be, you know, a big element to this, because you have so many, you know, you have the most talented golfers at their age group, and they've probably always been the best at their clubs. And, you know, as we know, in any competitive field, you know, the higher you get up, the more competitive it gets. And, you know, you start suddenly, you know, maybe developing habits that you didn't have in the past, or the pressure is this greater, and how you deal with a bad shot can be maybe the difference between you being, you know, a really good player and a great one.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. As cliches are cliches, but, you know, we've all heard, like, once you get
cliches for a reason though, right?
Yeah. I mean, golf is very mental. If you look at a round of golf, 93% of the time you're on the golf course, depending on the length of the round, is not golfing. You're not golfing. I mean, there's maybe 15 minutes in an entire round of golf where you need to be focused, and you need to be present, and you need to be in that moment. And so training them to understand that, like, we sit and work on our putting, our chipping, our bunker, but like 93% of our day is not golfing.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So, like, how many
numbers?
Yeah. How many athletes are actually taking that time to train their mind? It's not a thing yet. Like, it's slowly becoming a thing. Mindfulness, meditation, mental health, mental wellness. It's finally coming to the forefront, and we're shining like a small flashlight on it right now. There's still so much, you know, people's eyes are open to, like, oh, the different techniques of chipping, or how to create more spin, and how to, like, lower the launch. And we spend so much time on that stuff. But so that's why getting through to the athletes, like, spending time, like, you need to train your mind. You need to spend time training your mind. It's not huge buy-in yet. We have to, like, really push them to journal and to reflect. And it's like, it's a lot of, they right. resist it. They 100% resist it, because that's time they could be doing social media, or, you know, grabbing food with a friend. And so that value is still not quite understood, but it's getting there. It's getting there. And, like, that's our role. That's my role, is to help just plant those seeds. And again, try to drive some of the habits and the daily routine things to where they're doing more things to help with the mindfulness, the meditation, being able to get to that moment where you need to execute in that moment. Like, they can go on the driving range and they can pull off all the shots, right? But it's being able to execute in that moment where it's most needed, where the intensity is the highest, where you're at your highest you know, stage of stress, being able to calm everything down and perform the way you would perform on the driving range or playing golf with your mom and dad, right? So it's fun. It's fun, but it's kind of that hidden fruit right now still, I think, in the game.
I like that. I like how you put that there. Your experience and knowledge is such an asset to this sport in our country and for this episode as well. So Salima, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck with the upcoming season. And we really appreciate you enlightening us with so much of that knowledge and experience and all the anecdotes. It's been great.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you to the PGA of Canada for this opportunity and to you, Mark, for this conversation. And good luck to everyone with their seasons as well.
Awesome. Well, it's been our pleasure. And thanks for everyone for tuning into this episode of Tee Talks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Podbean for up-to-date podcast alerts and early access.